So many of us spend years believing our circumstances are what determine our future. We give away our power to the people, events, challenges, conditions, everything outside of us, we believe gives us control. It gives us validation and identity. The truth is that while we may not control any circumstance, we control our response. We control our response to every circumstance. Two people can experience the exact same setback, failure, mistake, defining moment. One becomes a victim of the circumstance while the other uses it to reclaim their power, use it as fuel to growth. The difference isn't the situation itself, because although it is constantly training and changing in time, value, and emotion, the difference isn't the circumstance. It's the same for everyone. It's the level of ownership, of accountability, of what did we do to be responsible? What did we do to attract it? What did we do to participate in the perception that created the response, the reclaiming of each person that they choose to take? Accountability, responsibility, attraction, and perception is not blame, not shame, and is certainly not justification. This accountability is ownership, because we ask ourselves, what did we do to be responsible, attract this to ourselves, participate in this perception, and what are we supposed to learn from it? This ownership is what creates the freedom to reclaim, remember, remind, and recollect our power, the infinite amount of power that we are connected to and through. Blaine, the first lesson that we're going to teach, and if anybody wants the replay of this training, and Blaine's going to have a Q&A session afterwards, has graciously volunteered his time for everyone to do hot seat coaching, to answer anything that you want, just email me, David means beloved, at D, first initial, Meltzer means servant. Email me, David at dmeltzer.com. Get the exercises, the guides, and the replay of this training. Reclaim our power. Blaine, the lesson number one is that responsibility or accountability is power.
Yeah.
And the moment that we take accountability for our own lives is the moment we gain or regain the power to take control. Because once we take control by learning and seeking the light, the love, and the lessons where nobody else can find it, it is accountability that will shift us from victimhood to victorhood or leadership. So instead of waiting for someone else to save us, solve us, to recognize us, acknowledge us for the ability that we have to influence some way the outcomes or better in our lives, that somehow the only control that we can have is not through our actions, but through our accountability of learning from those actions. Of what did we do to be responsible? What did we do to attract it? What did we do to participate in this perception? And what are we supposed to learn from it? Blaine, you understand power and the infinite amount of energy and power that we have through intuition, inspiration, and intelligence. How does this fall onto you when we talk about the relationship between accountability and power?
It's a great question, and it's framed, you know, I like the way that you position it around power. You know, power is the ability to generate movement. I'll just kind of put it very simply, generate movement. From a leadership perspective, leaders cause movement. We lose and diffuse our power when we start taking responsibility for things that are not ours. I mean, yeah, the idea here, and then I'll step into some Stoic philosophy with this. You know, Stoic philosophers or people that work with Stoic philosophy are distinguished by one policy as an everyday matter. And it's a refusal to worry about things that are beyond their control or that are otherwise, getting other people worked up. That I'm responsible for what I have the ability to influence, to actually work with. Today's actions are tomorrow's future states. So I want to be responsible for the actions I'm taking today. And are they consistent with the kind of movement I need to produce in my life to generate the results that I say I want? There's going to be stuff that happens out there that is beyond my control. I'm not responsible for it. I'm not even necessarily accountable for it. But what I can do is take responsibility for the actions I'm taking in the face of things that are going on around me, whether it's the economy or political environment or whatever it might be. What I can influence and what I can actually leverage, what I can cause movement around, is what I have control over, beginning with how I see what it is that's in front of me.
And within the context of anything infinite, power, intelligence, intuition, energy, inspiration, lies a paradigm shift of those that believe that they have to go get it, instead of those that believe and identify where they're interfering with it. In the context of accountability and power, where do people interfere with this power?
The interference takes place all the time. I wrote a book called Stop Drifting, Start Living. And it was based off of some of the work that Napoleon Hill did in Outwitting the Devil, the book that he wrote back in the 1930s and didn't get published until the early 2000s. I mean, there was about a 75-year gap.
Published in 1938 and published in 2011.
There you go. Yeah. And the reason for that was because he identified where the interference comes from. And it's the influence that people accept from outside sources that determine their future, as opposed to owning that their future is their responsibility. It's not my church. It's not my society. It's not my government. It's my responsibility to live the life that I have. And nobody else can do that but me. So the interference comes when I start handing power over and control over to outside sources. That's probably the easiest way to identify that.
It's so true. And it's even worse. A lot of times it's off a perceived identity, one that doesn't even exist, as well as every other perception. If anybody would like the exercise of how accountability is power, please. And what interferes with that power, please email me. David means beloved, D, first initial. Meltzer means servant. Let me be your beloved servant. Email me for the exercises, guides, and replay, david@dmeltzer.com. Lesson number two is something I'd love to send to everyone. It's called the results formula. Blaine, every result we experience begins with a thought. The thought becomes that perception we were just discussing. Perceptions become a meaning that we have power to give it, and that meaning becomes behaviors. And as we categorize behaviors, our outcomes are created by the way that we think, perceive, mean, or interpret, and behave. And that's how we respond to the uncontrollable around us. And as a results formula is a better definition of how to detach from results, is really a behavioral formula that what we think about turns into perceptions. Perceptions are meaning, which we control, and meaning creates behaviors. And categorizing behaviors as aligned in our divine direction or our power or interfering with our divine direction or power is a way that we experience the same interference. So many people experience things that are the exact same, but they see them or give meaning to them differently. And it all starts with the way they thought, because as you taught me years and years and years ago, everything happens twice, once in the thought and once in the meaning. And so as others see the feedback, which nobody likes feedback in the present, all of these behaviors end up differing because their thoughts differ, perception differ, meanings differ. Of course, then the behavior is different. And guess what? Formula, if your thoughts differ, your perception differ, your meaning differ, and your behaviors differ, guess what's going to differ as well? The results. And there's the subtleties of success. The margin of fulfillment, passion, purpose, and profitability is I can look directly as Napoleon Hill taught us, directly at the thoughts, which led to the perceptions, which led to the meaning, which led to the behaviors. And I can guarantee, I can show you why quantitatively you have better or more aligned divine thoughts, I mean, results than others. We cannot consistently outperform our thoughts, perceptions, meanings, and behaviors. It is impossible. How can we, though, take advantage of this results formula? It's easy to say, but as you know, I always say the simple things to do are simple not to do.
And that's it. And again, we lull ourselves into complacency. We get lulled by the attraction to comfort. And the human organism actually values comfort. We code it as safety. And things that are comfortable oftentimes are not going to be allowing me to grow. Growth requires extending beyond boundaries. When I start, my grandmother talked about growing pains. And I think growing pains are a great example of what we're talking about with this. Part of the results formula has to do with being willing to be uncomfortable, to get out of bed at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning and go, go take that jog, go take that run. Even though I see Marcus Aurelius talked about in Meditations, his diary, about wanting to pull the cover over his head because it was cold outside. And he was the emperor of Rome. He was the most powerful person in the world. Nobody would have begrudged him that. But he said, no, I've got something that I need to be doing. I'm here for a purpose. Nobody else can do my purpose. So he would get out of bed. That's what it takes, is being willing to step into that discomfort. And that's also what I think separates professionals from amateurs. Mm. Professionals will go, and you do a lot of work in your career and also currently with professional athletes. And these are people that have actually gone that extra mile. And that extra mile, there's almost nobody on that road.
That's why we call it the empty mile.
That's exactly right. And that's where the juice is. That's where you actually begin being as successful as you've dreamed about being.
No doubt. If you would like the results formula, I'd love to send it to you along with the replay of the training. The results formula, email me. David means beloved at D first initial. Meltzer means servant. David at dmeltzer.com. Let me be your beloved servant. Email me. All right. Lesson number three. My mom used to tell me, stop going below the line. Leaders never live below the line. Stop blaming, shaming, and justifying everything. Start leading, son. Blame, shame, and justification keeps us from focusing in on what we cannot control. Leadership, truly, of living above the line leadership, focuses on what we can do next and what we learned from the failures, mistakes, setbacks, defining moments of our past. When we blame, shame, and use justification on the economy, competition, timing, resources, or even worse, other people's opinion, we surrender our ability, our capability to create the change that we want. Growth, as your grandma says, begins where these excuses end. Why do people feel a need to blame others, to live in shame and justify what they're doing? Why can't we just, in human nature, enjoy that consistent, persistent pursuit of our potential by learning the lessons of our mistakes? We are made from our mistakes.
I think part of the reason that people default to blame and to excuse and to reason and justification has to do with some sense of identity. Yeah. And it's very subjective and very subtle as well. Far more people on this planet are actually identifying through their behaviors, their attitudes, and their thoughts as victims. They identify as victims. They behave as victims. It did it to me. The economy is doing it to me. If it wasn't for X, if it wasn't for Y, I would be. And that's an identity question. So one of the ways we begin to move beyond that is we start monitoring language. In language, just internal language. Where do I feel like I need to blame something? Where do I need to feel as if I've got, I'm going to take this excuse. It was raining outside. Well, I'm blaming the weather for my lack of movement. The weather is the weather. And going back to lesson one and two, it's how I code it, the meaning I'm making up about it. And that meaning is informed in large part by my sense of identity. Who am I? Am I the kind of a person who can perform even in adverse situations, or do I pull the covers over my head? It's an identity question.
And we never will overachieve our own self-image. That is part of the conduit of blame, shame, and justification. Once again, taking control by learning from the failures and mistakes. You are made from your mistakes. If you would like the made from the mistakes exercise for lesson number 3, stop living in blame, shame, and justification. Live above the line and start being a leader. Give and email me, david@dmeltzer.com. Lesson number 4 in reclaiming our power is understanding not only fear, but the response that we have to the uncertainty that creates fear, the fear that creates a need to defend or control or even prove ourselves. And fear, it often disguises itself in procrastination, indecision, or feeling overwhelmed. This rationalization of blame, shame, and justification, even self-sabotage. And if we don't identify how we respond to that need to defend, prove, and control, it will quietly control us. It will quietly control our divine direction. When we delay taking action because we are afraid of other people's opinions, of criticism, failure, setbacks, mistakes, rejection, uncertainty, or loss, it will only cause hesitation. And as we both know, it is alignment, action, and adjustment that creates the aggregation, acceleration, and compounding results that we desire or better. This is where momentum lies, with the relationship between fear, the response of fear, and this control or claim that we have, or reclaim of power. What influences, though, Blaine, our decisions? And when we fail to recognize or identify why we procrastinate, why we feel overwhelmed, why we go to blame, shame, justification, or even why we self-sabotage.
The purpose of the mind is to protect the ego. The purpose of the mind is to protect my self-image. And so my thoughts, oftentimes out of conscious awareness, my thoughts, how I describe something determines how I feel about it, which generates my behavior. Where does that description process exist? Well, it exists mostly out of my awareness. Physiologically, when you examine what fear feels like in the body, you get elevated heart rate, breathing moves up, palms get sweaty, eyes dilate. There's all kinds of this stuff that kind of goes on physiologically. The exact same physiological response is present with excitement. Excitement will generate the exact same physiological response that fear will. The only difference is how I'm coding it, how I describe it in my mind. And if the purpose of the mind is to protect, it's usually protecting me from imagined consequences. What if I actually turned the page and said, this could get exciting. This could be really exhilarating. It's literally a function of how I take responsibility for how I'm thinking. This is how I reclaim my power. Most of what we fear in life never occurs. It never occurs. And we are run by it nonetheless. So I want to be able to take charge of my description process. When I notice I've got something coming up, I kind of go, okay, how did I describe that? This is where emotional intelligence comes into play. I notice the emotion. What was the source? What was the imagined scenario that was going on? So I practice. I literally begin to practice interrupting the patterned way that I would typically respond. Interrupt the pattern, I can put something new in place.
And we'll discuss here in lesson 5 coming up. Before we do, discuss the consciousness versus the mind, and how the differentiator between the mind and consciousness work, and the two types of consciousness is we have witness consciousness, and then, of course, immersive consciousness, collective consciousness, this overwhelming consciousness. But if you would like to understand the fear response of fear, the disguises of fear exercises, email me, David means beloved, @D is my first initial, Meltzer means servant. Let me be your beloved servant. Please, I will email you the exercises, guides, my books. You can get the replay to this training, david@dmeltzer.com. Lesson number 5, Blaine. I was mentioning the difference between the mind and the conscious, which brings up how do we support the inputs of the conscious from the mind? Because the mind's working while you're sleeping. So you're not conscious when you sleep. You have your subconscious and your unconscious, but you're not conscious. And there's no witness consciousness when you sleep. There's the mind telling you to protect itself, to prove itself, to control what's going on outside of you. And so we have to have different mechanisms in order to not only distinguish between mind and consciousness, but to clear the consciousness from what the mind's bullshit is throwing at it to defend, prove, or control. Because adversity is always there and challenges are always there. And the event itself is not the problem. It's the meaning that we attach to it. It's what the mind says about it. And then the conscious goes ahead and it creates some transference of the thought into perception, into meaning, and then what worse, into behaviors that aren't aligned, that are interfering with where we want to be. So when a mistake, a setback, or a failure occurs, we repeat that story repeatedly, especially in our subconscious, which is constantly correcting our behaviors, both in a conscious level, but also an unconscious competency that creates more and more resistance, accelerates us in the wrong direction. It's separation, inferiority, superiority, anger, frustration, guilt, resentment, worry. It creates emotional attachment. And so if we want to take accountability while living in resistance, it's impossible. And so for me, I created this cancel, clear, connect, which says, when a thought comes from the mind that is not aligned with my divine direction, I say cancel, either inside my head or outside. If words, which are created by thoughts or feelings or beliefs, I cancel. But if they become repetitive, if they keep replaying, I know it's part of my subconscious, which means it's going to keep repeating itself even when I sleep, even when I'm not aware of it. So I create a clear mechanism, clear my mind, clear it of that subconscious. Let's change or replace that negative interfering thought, which leads to perception, which leads to meaning, which leads to behavior, with something that is aligned with the divine. But then there's certain things, Blaine, which is where my question lies. There's certain things that I cancel all the time, I clear, but the patterns keep on coming up. Now I know it's part of my genetic and energetic inheritance. It's part of my unconscious competency. It's hard-coded into David Meltzer. And so I need to find a way to connect to my source and have the patience, the gratitude, the forgiveness, and the accountability to dissipate and dissolve that energetic interference, which may take years. I can think of one circumstance that was external to me, a relationship that really damaged and hurt me and my family, which carried with it blessings and lessons, but it took 9 years. 9 years of connectivity work, of shifting my energy beyond the conscious that said, oh, I'm so grateful that happened, beyond the subconscious that was telling me that you're going to learn lessons from this and you'll be okay. But it was stuck in my unconscious competency. I would dream about this person pulling out his fingernails, pouring Tabasco on his fingers, while I was consciously telling everyone, oh, I'm so glad it happened, subconsciously sleeping fine. But I knew energetically that feeling wasn't lying to me. How do you help shift energy? Is there some sort of modality, methodology, or meditation that you use to allow us to have the gratitude, forgiveness, and accountability, the patience to allow energy to shift in an unconscious competency?
I'll talk about it in the context of the empty mile.
Yep.
And to fill in the empty mile, forgiveness is accompanied by true forgiveness is accompanied by forgetfulness. I begin to forget the imprinted hurt, the imprinted outrage, the imprinted violation. So true forgiveness will generate forgetfulness. So it now becomes a neutral event in my life. Now, how do you do that? Well, that's where the empty mile comes into play here. You spent 9 years And this is why a lot of people don't reclaim their power in the way that they could reclaim their power, because they're not willing to step into that 9-year process. It took me, however many years to develop this subliminal background noise that runs me. And if it took me 15, 20 years to develop that, for me to think that just a recognition that it's present is going to eliminate it is crazy. Yeah, the way that we rewire the mind is through repetition. Yeah, literally biologically, we start carving out new circuits, pathways that wire together, fire together. And when you begin that repetitional process, you begin to carve out new pathways. But it takes time to actually do that. The mind is plastic. The brain is plastic, more precisely. And in taking advantage of that plasticity, first of all, recognizing it, but secondly, being able to start engaging practices. So for you, as an example, and I love the example that you give there, you would catch yourself thinking about it. You would notice that I'm still dreaming about this. So it's impossible for me to take responsibility while I'm still living in resistance.
Yeah, you gotta release it, and
gotta release it.
The brain to the mind is like, or the mind to the brain is like time to a clock.
Exactly.
And we got to be able to use that. If you would like the cancel, clear, and connect exercise that will change your life consciously, subconsciously, and unconsciously, email me David@dmeltzer.com. David means beloved. D, first initial. Meltzer means servant. Let me send you this extraordinary exercise, David@dmeltzer.com. The last lesson, Blaine, before I let you take Q&A, is owning our future. Now, it's one thing about giving meaning to the past, one thing about living in the present, but a lot of people get confused when I talk about owning our future, because David, you told me the future is uncertain. How can we own uncertainty? And the future we're creating is determined by what? The behaviors that we have today. And the responsibility, the accountability is demonstrated through daily behaviors, including 5 levels of intention. What we do, say, think, feel, and believe indicate our behavior aligned in our divine direction. Every behavior we tolerate that isn't aligned, every conversation we avoid, opportunity we ignore, becomes part of our future results, or better, or worse, depending on whether it's aligned with or interfering with. So possibility becomes probability, probability, perception, perception, meaning, meaning becomes behaviors, behavior becomes reality. That's our future. We got to know what we want, who we can help, who can help us, how to get that done, and prioritize accordingly. But for me, it's the non-negotiable behaviors that create 90% of my future. Knowing that gives me ease that only 10% will be 12 hours of my awake time trying to figure out the circumstances, doing my best, learning lessons, and having fun. That's going to get me to where I want to be real quickly, because I want to make sure we're on time for your Q&A. For you, is there a mantra? Is there a mindset that you use? I use the what, the who, the how, and the now in order to get me there to reclaim the power of your future.
My actions today determine my future tomorrow. I mean, it literally doesn't get any simpler than that. I just planted a bunch of zinnias in our garden, and they require water. So my actions today will generate that future zinnia garden growing. If I don't water today, the seeds are not going to germinate, and I won't have zinnias, and my wife will be upset.
Yes, you will. And happy wife, happy life is exercise number 6. In other words, own your future by your behaviors. Know this. And if you would like to own your future, email me, get the replay, the guides, the exercises from today of all 6 lessons. The replay is especially valuable. Things don't sink in the first time. I promise you, you got to be repetitive and honest here, which is annoying. I know that. Email me, David@dmeltzer.com. Remember, most successful people are not those with perfect circumstances. They're people who consistently, persistently pursue their potential through accountability, not blame, shame, and justification. They don't use excuses. They never use blame and justification. They take action over that, and they grow over complacency. Leaders, entrepreneurs, athletes, leaders, and champions all face adversity. So do you. What separates all of us is our willingness to own the response, to claim our power rather than surrender to it. Accountability is not a burden to learn from. It's a superpower. The moment we own our thoughts, our perceptions, our meanings, and our behaviors, we own our choices, which means we own our future. Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Blaine Bartlett's a friend of mine, so my future is so bright I have to wear shades. BlaineBartlett.com. I want to thank you so much for joining me. This has been an incredible training. Our weekly Napoleon Hill Institute training, Reclaim Our Power. David@dmeltzer.com. Get my books, guides, exercises, and replays. I will send them to you. I'll pay for shipping. I'll pay for whatever you need. David@dmeltzer.com. Just email me. Blaine, I'm going to hand the controls off to you, and I'm going to go eat lunch. God bless you. I will see you all later.